Stay tuned now for Dr. Steven Zelikoff and a program you will not want to miss. Bone Talk. That's Bone Talk with Dr. Steven Zelikoff on 1460 WVOX.
Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. Today, my guest will be Dr. Yasmin Dar. Dr. Dar is an assistant professor of orthopedic surgery at New York Medical College. She's head of sports medicine at Montefiore New Rochelle and is a sports medicine specialist in specialty orthopedics in Harrison, New York. Welcome, Dr. Dar. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So today our topic is going to be the rotator cuff. Many people have problems with their shoulder. They have pain when they lift their arm up. They have pain when they move. A lot of the times that pain is annoying. It's nagging, and it's something that gives us difficulty with sleeping at times. And we've all had it at various times, and regardless of what we end up doing. And it's something that there are many, many things that people talk about, and I'm just wondering if we can really just try to get a better understanding of what is the rotator cuff and what are some of the common symptoms and injuries.
So shoulder injuries are very common in general. There's a significant amount of age variability, but there's a wide spectrum from say, my younger teenage 20-year-old football player to my older cyclist or maybe yoga, less impact type sports. So shoulder injuries in general are common, and shoulder pain unrelated to injury is actually quite common. So the rotator cuff is very specific to the shoulder. It's a set of tendons that basically cuff around the shoulder joint. Tendons are what attach muscle to bone. So any motion where your elbow leaves your body, that's basically a function of your shoulder and essentially a function of your rotator cuff. There are four muscles. They become tendons. They attach around the shoulder. And basically, it serves two functions. One is for motion and strength. The other is for stability. And stability is, you know, the shoulder, people think of it as a ball and socket. I always use the analogy that it's a golf ball on a tee because the socket part's very small. The ball part is bigger. If you imagine a ball and socket's a bit tighter, so you would have less motion or less range because the socket and the ball would be the same size. If the socket's smaller and the ball is bigger, it allows you more range of motion. So the shoulder has more motion than any joint in the body, which is probably why it's a bit more prone to injuries, especially things like dislocations, because it's inherently unstable.
Now, what are some of the common symptoms that people might experience if they have a rotator cuff injury?
So rotator cuff injury, there's a wide spectrum. So most of the time it's pain. People say when they lift their arm, when they try and reach out, they'll get pain, and it's generally not pain on the top part of your arm. A lot of people will complain of pain on the side of their arm, almost where your deltoid is, kind of like where you get your flu shot, because that's really where the shoulder gives
or
you
your COVID
pain.
Shot.
So a lot of people, like the COVID shot, which I'm sure caused some people some pain more recently having to have two, but essentially the same area. So people will come in and say, it's not my shoulder, it's my arm. But generally, it is really the shoulder that's giving them pain in the arm. Another common, you know, depending on the type of injury, is a common symptom is weakness. People say, I try and lift something, cup of coffee, or, you know, a box, and I feel like I can't move my arm fully, or I don't feel the strength in my arm. And they'll have difficulty lifting their arm even just against gravity or space, not even with something in their hand. And the more common, people will complain of night pain. And night pain is very specific to rotator cuff injuries, not necessarily, you know, tears, big tears, small tears, but injuries in general to the rotator cuff. The night complaint, they'll say, I don't really have much pain during the day, but when I go to sleep at night, I roll over, I can't get comfortable because my arm hurts.
So And again, we're on the phone today with Dr. Yasmin Dar. Dr. Dar is head of sports medicine at Montefiore New Rochelle, part of specialty orthopedics. Dr. Dar is also a sports medicine physician who takes care of many regional sports teams, various regional and collegiate teams, and has a great deal of experience dealing with patients with shoulder injuries. So as far as some of the symptoms, we talked about night pain is common, weakness, maybe some difficulty lifting the arm. How does this happen? What are some of the ways that somebody can go ahead and develop an injury, and how does that vary in terms of whether it be sports, whether it be profession, whether it be more something that's acute that happens suddenly or something that's more chronic that may happen over a longer period of time? And can you just talk a little bit about some of those things?
Because there is such a wide spectrum of rotator cuff problems or injuries, I like to group different types of injuries. And basically, there's two types of, quote, injuries. There's like you said, the acute traumatic injury, which is someone says, you know, I tripped, I fell, I lifted something too heavy, I, you know, fell off my bicycle, something of that nature. And then there's what we call the degenerative atraumatic, meaning someone says, I didn't really do anything, nothing significant, and I started to get pain and I started to have weakness. So that's the two general categories for the types of tears. And then there are categories for the extent of a tear. So I always tell people your rotator cuff is kind of like a braided rope. So you have a nice, tight, braided rope. Use the rope to pull things. So your rotator cuff pulls your arm in different spaces. Tendinitis, which is a term a lot of people know, just in general, it's common all over your body, not just your shoulder. Tendinitis is if that rope gets a little inflamed, but it works. It might hurt a little, but the rope itself still functions. Tendinosis is considered more degenerative. That's when your rope gets a little stretchy. Maybe the inner core starts to fray, but it still works and it's still in continuity. That's considered more of a overuse, chronic kind of age over time type rotator cuff problem. And then there's partial tears, which is where part of your rope is torn, and those partial tears can be 10%, 50%, 90% tears. And then there are full tears that go all the way through. Your rope's torn, rope no longer pulls anything. Your shoulder, you know, doesn't pull your shoulder in the direction you want to go. So how they happen is variable. I mean, we know a lot of people have partial tears just from life. Their work involves a lot of lifting or pulling objects, heavy lifting.
Tell us a little bit about some of the jobs that people would end up with higher at risk of a rotator cuff problem.
Anytime you need to use your arm to lift anything heavier, you're at risk. Your shoulder is not really, it's not really a weight-bearing joint. It's not like the knee or the hip where we load our full body weight across our knees or our hips. Your shoulders are really made to move things in space, but you know, reach up to the cabinet, something light. Anything where your job involves maybe lifting something heavier, 15, 20 pounds, up to 50 pounds. Now, obviously, there's a variability in how strong someone is compared to someone else, right. But age, male, female. But the basically, if you have to lift heavier objects, construction workers or people like police officers, firemen, or women, they might have injuries where they're climbing or they're carrying people to save people's lives or falling off of ladders. Those tend to be the more traumatic type injuries.
So repetitive overhead activities also, like painters, carpenters, things like that.
Right. And then obviously there's the athletic side of that. You know, your tennis pro or your golf pro, they also have a lot of repetitive injuries to their shoulder just as a function of their job.
Now, what about age and genetics? Does that affect the risk of a rotator cuff tear?
There's not a lot of research on genetics. The genetics probably doesn't necessarily play a role directly in the injury of a rotator cuff. There are some genetic issues, say, rheumatoid arthritis or systemic issues that make you maybe more prone to tendon issues in general, but not specifically to your rotator cuff. But age definitely plays a role. The body wears over time. I mean, you're using your body every day, every hour, every minute. And those degenerative type tears, if we look at the research, if you look at asymptomatic patients, people who have no pain whatsoever, and you MRI 100 of them, 30, 40% of them may have full thickness rotator cuff tears, but it may not bother them. Right. So those degenerative type tears can happen in that older population.
And what do you consider older? And be careful how you answer this.
That's a loaded question that I will plead the fifth. I mean, it varies, right? Some people, I'll tell you, our aging population is way more active now than ever in the past. So
right.
I think age is somewhat just a number. There are definitely people in their 70s who would run circles around you or I. But I also think there's people who are younger who maybe lift heavier, do more weight training, and you know, bodybuilder types who are more putting more stress across their shoulders. So age matters just from a wear perspective, but activity level is very variable, and our aging population is probably more active than ever.
Now, if you have an injury to one shoulder, are you more likely to have an injury to the opposite one, or is it mostly your dominant arm?
It does tend to be your dominant arm, because that's the one you usually lift with, especially if you're doing something single-armed, or say something is falling, you're moving a TV and it's falling, you'll generally tend to reach out with your dominant arm, because that's just reflexes coming into play. But it can happen in either shoulder. In traumatic injuries, you know, you trip, you fall, you slip down the stairs, that's either shoulder is very possible to get injured, and sometimes both, because you brace yourself with both your arms.
So, again, we're on the phone today with Dr. Yasmin Dar, head of sports medicine at Montefiore New Rochelle, part of Specialty Orthopedics in Harrison. So how do we prevent rotator cuff tears? Is it something that you can prevent by sort of working out, or is this something that you just sort of, you know, live your life and you just hope you don't get it?
To a certain extent, you can prevent some rotator cuff tears. The traumatic ones where you trip and fall, I mean, that's life, right? I mean, we've all had tripped over something in our home or taken a slip on the snow, especially in the last few weeks. But the more degenerative kind of wear and tear type tears, keeping the rest of your shoulder girdle strong can offload your rotator cuff. So your rotator cuff is really four muscles. There are a number of other muscles around the shoulder, mostly your deltoid, your which is on the side, your pec, which is the pectoralis, which is in the front, and a lot of muscles around your shoulder blade. So maintaining the strength of those muscles can be somewhat protective, because they'll balance your shoulder, and also can be somewhat protective for an injury, because they'll take on some of the load instead of your rotator cuff. But also maintaining flexibility. And I think flexibility is one of those things that people don't think of, especially for an upper extremity. You think of that more for your legs. You know, runners will think of stretching their legs, stretching their hamstrings. But keeping your motion in your shoulder is important, because your shoulder is used to having the full wide range of motion, and it really can move in every plane. So keeping that motion, keeping that flexibility allows it to function at an optimal level, and keeping your strength gives you some protection from injuries.
And these, again, they're smaller muscles in the back and the front of the shoulder. These aren't the muscles that look good at the beach. So this isn't the muscles, your curls and your pecs and your push-up stuff. This isn't the stuff that I'm working out so I can look great. These are smaller muscles.
The beach body muscles, the summer workout, as I call it.
Yes.
Chest and arms. So, no, these muscles, you really can't see that much. I mean, you can see the muscles a little on the shoulder blade, but they're not the bigger muscles in the shoulder. But they are significantly important, because they're really the only muscles that attach right to the ball part of your shoulder, and they do some more than others depending on the plane of motion. They are really isolated. If you isolate one, it really does independently move your shoulder. So a tear in one it might be more significant than a tear in a different type of rotator cuff, but they are very small muscles in general.
Now, as far as, again, we're on the phone with Dr. Yasmin Dar of Specialty Orthopedics and head of sports medicine at Montefiore and Rochelle. So as far as you've been injured, you have weakness, you have pain in your shoulder, didn't get better after a day or two, maybe taking some Advil or ibuprofen, you go ahead, I see you in the office. What can I expect as far as physical exam, imaging studies, MRIs, things like that? How do you determine whether, you know, how do I get treated going forward?
And that's a great question because there is a wide range of treatment. So generally, people, especially if someone says, I tripped, I fell, you'll want to get an X-ray just to make sure there's nothing broken or fractured, and also see the overall alignment of the joint, make sure there's no significant arthritis that might be causing some of your symptoms. Your physical exam and your history is probably more important than most other things. Getting a good history to know what happened if someone does say they had an injury or they just woke up with pain. And your physical exam, every muscle kind of does one type of strength or motion compared to another. So you can glean a lot of information just from the physical exam. Seeing how the shoulder moves, how the patient moves their shoulder, if you can move their shoulder, and then seeing what their strength if they have any weakness related to one muscle or the other. The only way you really see a rotator cuff to visualize it is really with an MRI. There are some other studies that you could use, sometimes ultrasound, sometimes CAT scans, but those are generally reserved for people who say couldn't get an MRI, like someone who has a pacemaker or something metal, where an MRI would not be an option. But an MRI looks at soft tissue very well, and that's really where you can see the size of a tear, if it's partial, if it's larger. So that will give you a lot of information on how to counsel patients on what to do next.
And also whether it's an acute tear or what the quality of the tissue is, which I guess sort of comes into play in terms of whether you operate on these folks or not. I mean, what percentage of people with rotator cuff tears need surgery? I mean, does everybody that has a rotator cuff tear need an operation?
I would say the majority actually don't. The majority of tears you see are probably those partial tears. And there's a term that I'm sure a lot of people have heard, which is called impingement. Impingement is essentially when the space between the rotator cuff and the bone, when you go to lift your arm, kind of get pinched, and people will have pain. And a lot of times that can scuff up your rotator cuff over time. So those partial tears in general are very common and a very wide age range. Anywhere from 40 to 80, you can see those partial tears. And those, if they're the lower grade ones, 10, 20, 30%, a lot of times can be treated with anti-inflammatory medications, sometimes a physical therapy program to strengthen the other muscles, again, to offload that one muscle that might have or that one tendon that might have a partial tear. Sometimes we do injections, cortisone and other types of platelet injections, things that can help pain. It's not going to heal the tear, but it a lot of times can alleviate the pain. And if someone doesn't have any symptoms, we generally leave them alone. So I would say that is probably the majority of shoulder rotator cuff tears. The more traumatic ones are the ones that end up needing further treatment like surgery, probably account for 20% or less.
So as far as injections, you mentioned cortisone shots. How often can you have a cortisone shot? And at what point do you feel that it stops being helpful and maybe putting things at increased risk?
So, again, it depends on the type of tear. So if you have a partial tear, your strength is good, your motion's pretty good, but it hurts, and you've tried medication, you've tried some physical therapy, I think a cortisone injection is a fairly benign intervention. You know, diabetics, and sometimes you have to be a little careful because they're blood sugars, but one, maybe a second one 2 months later. But after that, I would say it's diminishing returns because the treatment is either working or it isn't. And I think repeated cortisone injections especially in a small time frame, probably aren't a good long-term treatment option. And that's different than the patient who comes in today and you give them a cortisone injection and and you see them again 2 years later. That's probably fine to give them another cortisone shot 2 years later to see if it helps. But one, maybe two, and after that, I would say diminishing returns.
Once you identify people that really aren't getting better and continue to have that weakness, or you have somebody with a bigger tear, what's the time frame to fix these? Is this something that you need to do emergently, or is this something that you can watch for a while? And then when you do it need surgery, how do you actually fix these rotator cuff tears?
So those partial lower-grade tears, you have a good amount of time to watch. That's different than the person who comes in who trips and falls and can't lift their arm, or dislocates their shoulder and can't lift their arm, and they have a larger tear. So the two tears that always concern me or make me a little quicker to recommend an intervention are the traumatic tears where the tendon has pulled away from the bone. So if you think about it, it's almost like a cut on your hand. If you cut your hand and it gaps open and you don't get stitches right away, it doesn't heal as well and it may not heal fully. As opposed to the person who cuts their hand and gets it stitched up the next day, they'll heal well and they'll scar well. So I use that analogy a lot with rotator cuff tears. If the tendon attaches at the bone, if the tendon's pulled away and it's retracted, unfortunately that gap is a problem. One, it's probably going to cause a lot of pain and a lot of weakness. Two, the further it is away, the harder it is to get back. And we know if we leave those people alone, over time, it will retract further and it may start tearing the other parts of your rotator cuff. The other type of tear is what I call my pseudo-paralytic patient. And what that means is they're not paralyzed, but they can't move their arm at all. Those are generally massive tears. So they've probably torn two, maybe three of the four rotator cuff tendons from something traumatic. They tripped, they fell, they dislocated their shoulder, and they can't lift their arm at all. That tells me that the entire function of their rotator of their shoulder has been disrupted. They no longer have the stability or ability to move. Those two types of tears, generally, the ones that have the massive tears should probably be fixed in a few weeks. The ones that are retracted, look at the research, you're looking at probably your best healing window in that 8 to 12-week period. So the smaller ones, you might say, okay, I'm going to watch a little. The ones that are bigger, and bigger in the shoulder is really not that big. I mean, you're talking about 2 centimeters, 3 centimeters. Those you would be, I'd be a little more prone to fix sooner. Not necessarily an emergency, but we say an urgency.
Now, again, we're on the phone with Dr. Yasmin Dar, head of sports medicine and a shoulder specialist out of Specialty Orthopedics in Harrison. How do you actually fix these?
And I didn't answer the other half of your question.
Open or arthroscopic or?
Right. I didn't answer the other half of your question. How we fix them. So, That we say is surgeon preference. I mean, my personal preference is arthroscopic surgery is probably the mainstay of treatment. And what that is essentially making a few small incisions around the shoulder and using instruments the size of a pen to go in with a camera, look at everything, and then we fix it through these indirect measures, this minimally invasive technique. And how we fix them or what we use, the generic term is what we call an anchor. An anchor is some type of almost like a screw. So it can be metal, it can be plastic, it can be kind of a fake bone type anchor. And essentially you make a little hole in the bone and you put that screw into the bone, and those screws have sutures or little ties attached to them. And you pass those through the tendon, and you basically tie the tendon back down to the bone. Arthroscopic is probably the mainstay. I mean, in my time, in my 10 years in practice, I would say I basically do everything arthroscopic for a rotator cuff. There are some types of tears that may be easier to treat open depending on your arthroscopic ability, and there's nothing wrong with an open rotator cuff repair. Reality is, however you can get it repaired the best and get it back to the bone and have it fixed and heal, that's how it should be done.
And these are all outpatient procedures for the most part?
Yes, it's same-day surgery. You can. So my standard rotator cuff, you come in, surgery's maybe an hour, hour and a half, and you'll go home a few hours later. There is a bit of a recovery. Generally, you'll have to be in a sling for probably 4 to 6 weeks, depending on the size of the tear. And that's really just to protect the tear. It's the same thing like that analogy with the stitches in your hand. You don't want to pick at those stitches. You just leave those stitches in, and the cut has to heal. The same thing in your shoulder. Early on, what's keeping the tendon attached to the bone is the stitches. It needs time to heal, and you don't want to stress it too early and cause some motion at those stitches, which would affect the healing. So there's some time to let it heal, and then there's some time to get your motion back. And then the last part, because you've had an injury, you've been in a sling for a while, we haven't really let you move too much because we're letting it heal. The last part is getting your strength back. But overall, the smaller tears, the 1-2 centimeter tears, have a very high success rate, somewhere in that 92-95% success rate for return of function and removing pain.
That's amazing. I think that the fact that there's hope for people with bad shoulders and with chronic pain, and particularly with acute weakness, I think is really, really important. I think the fact that surgery is not really always required. And I think the reality is that if people do have shoulder pain that doesn't get better, they need to come for an evaluation. Thank you again.
Absolutely.
This is Dr. Zelikoff with Bone Talk.